Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Well, we have a lot of things to talk about this weekend. We just saw David Lemieux and Canoa walk away with victories this weekend. Also found out that it now is almost seems that the Floyd and Conor McGregor fight is not going to take place unless something happens very, very soon, because it looks now that that fight is now going to be the Triple G Canelo fight is going to be in September. So, a lot of things to talk about tonight. I'm going to grab Scully here in a moment. First, before we start, let's say a very happy birthday to my co-host, Mr. Jabron Clement. Young whippersnapper. I won't tell everybody how young he is, but he is. It is his birthday today, and we're definitely looking forward for him to come in. We hadn't actually thought that he would be in today, but hey, he boxing diehard, so we're going to get him in at his convenience. Of course, I'm sure there's some family things that he's going to have to take care of also. But I'm going to grab Scully right quick and let's see what's going on here. I know Scully's been doing a lot of running around. I think one of his guys might also be fighting here pretty soon. And I'm hoping sometime before within the next couple weeks or so, we can get Angel on the phone and, Abel on the phone and see and kind of learn a little bit about what's going on. Well, of course, right now, it would seem to me that just about everything else is on the back burner now because the fight that we have been promised, it seems like we're going to get it. But, until it's signed on the dotted line, no one knows for sure. But let's look forward to it, see what's going on. As I said, I'm going to pull Scully in here. I'm going to try to get, see if we can't get the champ in here also tonight. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to grab him also. Well, good evening, Scully. How we doing? Hello, Scully. Doesn't look like we got Scully yet. I'll try to get him back in a moment. Let's see. They say the third time's a charm, so we're going to jump in here, and maybe we can get Layman in, and then we'll try Scully. Always good to talk to, with the champ. Okay. Scully says he'll be here in about 10 minutes, so we can do that. And as I said before, I'll get the champ in now. Man, I wonder what the weather's like up there in Indianapolis. I mean, you know, when it starts raining down here in Southern California, it's, you know, it's hard to say what's going on when it starts raining here. Let's see. Okay, we got the champion. We got, hello, Scully, are you there? Oh, Scully's not there. Hello, champ.
What's going on?
Oh man, what is happening? What is going on? I was telling everybody. It's of course, as soon as I said it, here he comes. It's the birthday boy himself, Mr. Jabron Clement. So
yeah.
We can start off. We can start off by wishing him a happy birthday, and you know, hopefully, we look to celebrate many, many more with him. Young whippersnapper here, so you know I'm gonna try to stay with you. So, Jabron, how we doing tonight, birthday boy? How's it going?
I'm all right, JK. Doing just fine.
You all right? You still you know, I mean, I know birthday. You know, a lot of family things and whatnot. Everybody wishing you happy birthday. How was your birthday so far, my man?
It was great. It was great. Can't complain, man. You know, nothing extravagant, but, you know, just family. And I had friends come up from my hometown from Virginia and surprised me. And we went to a nice R&B show last night at the Apollo. So, you know, it's all cool.
All right. It's all good. Nice show night at the Apollo. Hey, you know. But hey, you know, man, it's finally has happened. I don't know about you gentlemen. You know, I don't know if it was worth all the hype that we, you know, and fanfare that we had before the fight. But I'm gonna start with the birthday man here. I know you were saying that you were out, but you know, I'm sure you've heard some descriptions and whatnot, I don't think you know, we all kind of thought the same thing. I think we were hoping for a better fight. But Jabron, you any thoughts about what we saw last night?
Last night, of course, I didn't see live action. I woke up early this morning, well, a little bit after I went to sleep. But I watched the fights, and it's more questions that need to be answered than before the fight, and that's pertaining to Canelo. The overall fight with Chavez Jr., I mean, we all know this was a money grab. We know it was a money fight. We never had any real high expectations of Chavez Jr. So, I mean, the loss, I mean, it's not something that people are falling out like, wow, I can't believe he lost. So with that being said, with the fight, I was very surprised that Canelo wasn't sitting in between the rounds, which I think became a very psychological advantage for him, because, you know, Chavez tried to show his kahunas by standing up at first, but we saw that go away very quickly. And we have to ask ourselves, man, does Chavez Jr. just have a very superior chin, or Canelo don't possess enough punching power to get a lot of those top elite middleweights out of there. And something that I took note of last night in the after the press conference, and it, you know, he went and got cleaned up, is that Canelo is having hand issues. And it started, you know, with the Liam Smith fight. And when I see that, it makes me cringe, because it's like all these years he's being protected by putting him in there with blown up welterweights and lightweights and stuff like that, where now he's fighting guys his size and he really got to hit those guys. And when he's hitting them, they're not going anywhere. So now it's doing more damage to his hand. So this fight in September is going to be very, very interesting, because I don't see Canelo being able to do the thing that he did with Chavez Jr.
Most definitely, it seems like Canelo's been has had hand issues. I think it goes back a little further than that. I would even take it back to the Austin Trout fight. You know, but that's because, you know, we've been watching him out here, of course, House of Boxing and the different fights he's been getting ready for. But I think he's going to have a problem with his hands. I think he's going to have a problem with power. Like you said, you know, getting these legitimate guys off of him. Like you said, this was strictly a money grab. It wasn't like, you know, anybody was I mean, it would have been an upset if Chavez had won that fight. But let's bring somebody in that's always familiar with the ring and always has great insights. Leon, first of all, can you kind of, you know, tell us about the psychological effect when you look over across the ring and you see, you know, your corner standing up, you know, while you're down there trying to gas for air or trying to get the instructions from your trainer. Leon, tell us how that plays in, and what did you think of the fight last night?
Well, first off, I want to say happy birthday, Jabron. Man, I hope you had a great birthday, and like JK said, I hope you have plenty more, man. It's a pleasure knowing you, my brother. I do want to get that out the way. I want to say the psychological has a lot to do with it, but I'm just going to put it out there, what I think took place with this fight. Everybody that Chavez Jr. boxed with, I think that they did not possess the arsenal or the skills that Canelo has. So you can get good in sparring and get very confident and think you're having a great camp when you're boxing with people that, though they may be the same weight, they may have a certain skill set. It could bring up your skill set, but until you get in there with that actual person and you see what they're bringing to the table, see, when you're sparring, you're using bigger gloves. And when you're a big guy coming down to a catch weight and you're fighting a guy like Canelo, who is a superior fighter offensively and defensively, and you don't have those big gloves on no more, it can kind of sometimes be a shocking awe when you meet somebody with that kind of speed, because if you really break down this fight and go back and look at the whole entire fight, the only thing, in my opinion, now again, I could be wrong, but in my opinion, the only thing that went wrong in this fight was that he was so thrown off by the speed of Canelo that he could not get himself ever in that mode where he could get in his groove. And I think that at some point when he realized that the speed factor was just too much for him, and he was cracking at times when he landed some clean shots. I think his mind just kind of went into this almost, what do I do? And if you go back and look at the corner, they wasn't really giving him any real instructions. The only thing I mostly heard, throw some punches, let your hands go. Well, it's a whole lot more that needs to be said than that. I mean, even to the point where you have to almost give up a round intentionally just so you can make that adjustment of getting your feet in the right position to be able to throw a punch. Because if you go back and look at the tape, every time Cornelio took a step, it was always a skip faster than Chavez. Chavez's feet were never in the position to really be effective. And the only time that it really was effective, it was when he was in close. But then he already had so much fear built up in his mind that Cornelio can punch and that he's a warrior, and he's going to be into a war if that's what he was going to, like, if he didn't stay there. That's why people kept saying, well, why does he keep pulling out? Well, he was pulling out because he knew in his heart he could not go to war with Cornelio Alvarez. So when you break down this fight, it ain't that Cornelio was more skilled. I mean, technically he is, but it was because Chavez Jr. was so much bigger, he was slower, and so therefore his timing was off because Canelo was so much faster. And if you know anything about the sweet science of boxing, the man to get his foot in the right position first can always land the faster and the harder punch. So if you break that down, then that pretty much gives you a whole overlook on the entire fight. Because the only time that Chavez was actually effective, and he'd only do that for about a thousandth of a second, was when he would try to get him toe-to-toe and start throwing punches. But then I think that fear of, okay, he's faster than me and he got power, so let me get out of here. And that's what we saw pretty much the whole fight. And then there was a point in the fight, later in the fight, where, again, his corner was, you got to do something. You got to do something. Like, dude, you ain't saying nothing. Anybody could tell me to throw some punches. What did we work on in training that you could actually remind me of other than saying throw some punches? I've experienced that before myself personally with people I wouldn't name, but you cannot give a fighter who comes back to his corner looking for some help. You can't just say throw punches. Would you think he don't know that? Like, if you got to tell a person he needed throw punches, then he probably don't need to be training with you, and he probably don't even need to be fighting. But now, if you could say something more effective, like exactly what is it that he's doing wrong? Maybe he should be leading, setting up with the jabs, working off the jabs. I mean, maybe he should be trying to get close to work on the inside, turning, using angles, tying them up. You never said anything other than throw some punches. So I don't understand what you was getting paid for other than giving him some water and some Vaseline. So with that being said, we go over here to Cornelio's corner. He was on his game, man. You could tell that this man came to fight. He came to win. And that is not to say that Chavez Jr. didn't, because I know for a fact from one soldier to the next, he did not want to let boxing down as he had in the past, and he certainly did not want to let one of the greatest fighters of all times, which just happens to be his father, down. I think he did the best that he could, but I think he knew that if he opened up, there was a great chance, because Cornelio was so sharp, man. I mean, that dude could have hit a fly in the eye last night, and the fact that Chavez Jr. thought that, oh, because I'm going to be a little bigger, I'm going to be a little stronger, he thought that he could win, but that was the mindset going into the fight. They didn't have a B plan, and it was very evident because the only thing he done was try to box, which he's not a boxer, but then he knew he couldn't fight with him. He knew that he could not match speed and power with him. Well, maybe he could match power, but the one to land first is the one that normally wins, and it don't matter how hard you can punch. So he wasn't willing to take that chance, man. And so I thought he did the best he could for the trainer that he had, for the sparring that he had, but I think he lost that fight. Personally, not in the fight, I thought he lost it in the preparation because he never was able to make adjustments. He could not match his speed. He could not break down his defense. There was nothing that he could do to penetrate Canelo Alvarez's physical condition nor mental condition, and that's why I believe the fight looked the way that it did.
Well, champ, you spoke upon the speed to do with basically Canelo carrying the fight.
Hold on 1 minute, Jabron. Let's get Scully's opinion, and then
Scully back.
Scully's here. What's up?
I'm back in action. I'm back in action.
All right, well, as you know, it's Javon's birthday today, and you mentioned that you guys happened to hook up a couple weeks ago. So, Scully, why don't you tell us exactly what you saw in the fight last night, and any words you have for the birthday boy today?
Well, happy birthday, first and foremost. It was great to meet you in person. It was a nice surprise, and, I really enjoyed it. As far as the fight last night, I posted a thing on Facebook today, kind of a long, essay. But basically what I was saying was I could feel it. I've been there, when you're in the ring and – just things aren't going your way, and you want to, you want to punch. I mean, every fighter, even when a guy doesn't punch, like he wants to, it's just a matter of actually doing it, training to do it and having it become, like a trigger where you just let it go. But I know that feeling of being in a ring and wanting and having my mind racing, and you want to do this and you want to do that. But it takes everything you have just to be able to do it a couple times. And you can kind of see it with Chavez, like every once in a while he would let go. He would get Canelo on the ropes and he would let go. And it was almost like, okay, here he goes. He's in it now. But then he just couldn't sustain it, And I think because it just took so much for him to build up I don't want to say the word courage, but so you understand what I mean. Like to build up the courage to let his hands go, and he would do it. But then I think he felt Canelo getting acclimated to it and was about to fire back, so he stopped. And I just felt like his mind was probably racing, really racing. He had a million thoughts going through it. He couldn't find a game plan. He couldn't find the range. And, he just didn't have answers. I felt bad for him just because I've been in his position before, and it's not pleasant, that's for sure.
Go ahead, Jabron. You have some questions. Why don't you address that to Layman first?
Yeah, he was talking about him getting acclimated to the speed and different things of that sort. But it felt like Canelo was carrying the fight, like how Triple G kind of carried his opponent so he won't just demolish them and get them out of there. I felt like he was carrying him. Like, how can you explain Canelo standing there, leaning his forehead up against Chavez Jr. with his hands at his waist, waiting for him to swing? There's no timing with that. All you got to do is let it go. So was that a mental thing?
I was referring to Chavez's speed, not Canelo. If I'm saying that correct, because I was saying that I felt like Chavez could not get into the fight with Canelo because he could not bring up his level, his timing with Canelo. I think that his sparring partners, for maybe wearing bigger gloves, I think that he maybe got adjusted to that type of speed. But when he got in the ring with those 10 ounces or 8 ounces or whatever they fought in, I think that was maybe a little overwhelming to him, because this guy's punching with speed and velocity. And I think that, like, if you just look at the fight and go back and watch it with the volume off, You'll see Chavez try. He tried to establish his jab, but everything he did, he was just too slow. So that's why I say that the speed, to me, played a factor in the fight. And I think it was intimidating because he didn't know what to do. And that's why when they just kept saying throw punches, they couldn't say anything else either because he could never get his hands, he could never get his punches off fast enough to even do anything to Canelo. And I think that just dictates the whole fight.
Is that it? Was that it, Jabron?
Yeah, I guess that's it. I'm gonna just leave it at that.
Well, let me add a little more to it. I have been in fights where I was so rusty. Like, I give you a point in case. When I fought Vladimir Klitschko, the second fight, I had been laid up in the hospital for 9 months. For 9 months of a man, for my entire life, I've always been active. I've never just been laid face down in the hospital with an IV drip in my arm. So I only was given X amount of months to train, and so I did the best I could, and with my sparring partners, I started to feel better, but I knew my timing wasn't all the way there. And then when I got in the ring and I got those 10 ounces on and he was so much faster, then I couldn't even adjust to his speed because of my rustiness, because of my timing. Even though I had speed too, I couldn't adjust my speed to his speed. I couldn't adjust my foot movement to his foot movement because of my rust. So that's why I'm only saying from a psychological standpoint of not, and you know what, I could be wrong. I really could. So there again, I'm just saying what I imagine when I saw the fight going in the way it was going, I tried to point out what is the single most deciding factor in this fight. And what it was the footwork. It was the speed. I mean, Cornelio, man, that dude, he was electric, man. That dude was throwing punches left and right, throwing combinations, touching them up. He was moving. He was beautiful. And Chavez could not, he didn't have an answer for it. He never once caught a punch and came back. He never counterpunched. I mean, he didn't do anything. He couldn't get his jab going. Nothing he did. His footwork was slow. He was plodding. But again, Canelo was more like a rabbit, man. He was all over that place. So that's why I say, from my experience, being able to recognize as a fighter in the ring, that it looked to me like Canelo, like Chavez Jr. was having problems trying to get the timing, get his speed down, get his distance, because Canelo was in, he was out. He did it all last night. He looked great to me. And as far as carrying, maybe he did carry him a little bit because we don't know if his fist was bothering him or not. But he had bad intentions on a lot of his punches. So I think in my own fair assessment, I would say I think that Chavez Jr. could take a better punch than maybe people thought. But I thought he did the best he could. I just felt like he fought a better man that night. And, you know, I can't be mad at him. He tried, but, you know, it just seems like his plan to go in there and box a guy, maybe because he was thinking, oh, I'm tall, I'm going to use my reach, but he was just too slow.
Scully, you know, since you've been on both sides, the trainer also, Layman, you know, kind of spoke on it. When you come back to the corner and the only thing that your corner can tell you is you got to throw more punches, you got to throw punches. Is that, you know, like kind of an indication, you know, that you're behind and that you, you know, you need to step up the gas a little bit more? Or, I mean, what are some actual things that this trainer could have done to try to correct what Chavez was doing wrong? Or, you know, like Layman says, was he so indoctrinated in his sparring that he could never get out of that mode?
Right. You know, it's a tough spot. You know, you're under pressure. You only have a minute to speak. You know, you got like 45 seconds between the, you know, bringing the stool in and everything. you know, the trainer, he's got a short window there. He's got to come up with some stuff. You know, sometimes I'll be honest, like sometimes a trainer, depending on who he's working with, depending on who his student is, sometimes you may be stuck because the guy's so you know, outclassing him. You know, it's almost like a mystery other than the basic, you know, get your jab working. I mean, I always, if I'm ever stuck or if anything is never obvious, I always at least tell the guy, keep your jab pumping. Get your legs into your jab. Double your jab. You know, you want to at least give him the impression that you're trying to give him some sound advice rather than just, you know, trying to motivate him. You know, and as Neymar said, I mean, we all know we have to throw punches. That should be automatic. But at the very least, if you're having trouble as a trainer, I mean, if you're having trouble figuring the other guy out, you know, you should at least have your guy refresh his memory that he always is going to have to use the jab, double the jab. And, you know, I thought if Chavez had any success, the best, if you take the moments of the fight where he looked his best, was when he established his size and his strength. And when he just went for broke and said, you know what, I'm gonna back Canelo up. I'm just gonna work. And he did it a couple times with a level of success. And you know, I would go back to that. I mean, I would say, look, whatever's working, you know, whatever you do tonight that looks the best, that you've had your best moments with, let's try and capitalize on that. I think what probably happened, and this is what I was trying to say earlier. I think he was successful a few times when he got Canelo on the ropes, but I think he felt that Canelo was adjusting to it, and Canelo was about to start countering and getting his timing down. And I think that's why sometimes, almost inexplicably, for no apparent reason, Chavez backed off when he had Canelo against the ropes. And I think as a fighter, I think that's probably what happened. Like, he could feel that Canelo was starting to time him. And rather than fall into that, he figured he'll just retreat and start over. So I think all the way around, he was just at a loss. I think just psychologically, I think he was just beaten. He didn't know what to do. Canelo was sharp, as Lema said. I mean, Canelo was really sharp, and I think everything that Chavez tried, Canelo had an answer for, and he was really on his game. And you know, when you're in with a guy, and everything he does, he has everything you do, he has an answer for. You know, it's disheartening, and you know, like I said, it's just a tough, tough, tough spot to be in.
What's next for Chavez Jr., John?
You know, I mean, it's terrible for him in the sense that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if what's next is he retires, because coming back after that is going to be very difficult. I mean, people aren't going to want to see him, you know, really. They're not going to, you know, the only thing he'll probably could do now is be a stepping stone for the younger guys. And more than likely, his spirit is probably going to be affected. He's probably not going to want to train as hard, and he may not be able to train as hard, motivate himself. I mean, I don't know. From what I know, and just history, and just knowing him, you know, I don't know him, but I mean, just knowing what I know, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even box anymore, to be honest with you.
I'm kind of in that same realm myself, John, but Champ, I'm going to ask you, what do you think is next for Chavez Jr.? You know, will he be reduced to a gatekeeper? If he stays in the game, or, you know, is it time for him to possibly ride off into the sunset, considering the long layoff he had before this fight?
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know what his thinking is. I think he needed to take another long layoff because he has disgraced. First of all, I feel like he's hurt right now. And my heart goes out to him because I know he feeling like he let his father down. He let all his father fans down. He let his fans down. And he let himself down above all. I think that he should just take some time off, leave his, like really depart from boxing and not even be on the map whatsoever for at least 6 months and dig deep and find out if this is what he really, really, really wants to do going forward. I just think that that's what he should do, man. I don't think that he should even try to make an answer now because he's got so many emotions, so many things must be running through his mind. Can I do it? Do I still want to do it? I mean, the embarrassment that he has to live with for the rest of his life is going to be very, very, very hard. And to the extent where, in my opinion, I would like for him to take off for about 6 months, come back, have a couple more fights to just try to show the people that that was not him and that that was not his best performance. Because a long layoff and then coming back to the ring, what do people really expect? So I don't get that. So do you really expect for a man to be able to perform on the level of a top rated fighter such as Canelo Alvarez after being in such a long layoff and thinking he's going to be just as good and even really have a chance to win? That just don't make sense. And people just need to stop and think and don't be so insensitive and try to and just understand the man. He did the best he could, and if he wouldn't, he would have never tried to press the fight. At the times that he did, he just didn't have success because he was locked up, man. He was locked up because he had so much rust on him. And I said the speed factor. So I think, he should take some time off, think about what it is he wants to do, and then come back, man. And whichever way he decides to go, I'm going to support him.
Javon, Mr. Bruce over there, guy named Relentless, is all of a sudden talking about sensitivity. Javon, what do you think about that? Come on now. I mean,
well, to be honest with you, JK, I was leaning in that direction. Like, I'm not even thinking about the sport of boxing. concerning Chavez Jr. I'm very concerned about his well-being because mentally I don't think he's a mentally strong person, and I think his family and handlers around him for the next, I would say, 6 months to a year really keep a close eye on him because I don't think that, like I said, he's very mentally strong that he could fall off track once again and easily slide into the drinking and the recreational drugs and stuff like that. So I'm more concerned about that.
I agree. I agree with you 100%, my brother. That was right on the money.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you with that. I mean, you know, will history repeat itself or, you know, I'm not sure, I agree with you in some cases, Langan, where you talk about, the psychological factor. And I also agree with you, Jabron, when you say, you know, I really think as a fighter, I don't know the gentleman as a person, but as a fighter, I do think, Chavez Jr. Is definitely going to be facing a lot of adversity simply, you know, behind all of the hype. He's lost this fight, I don't know what he does to re-motivate himself. When you look back at his past, it's hard to change bad habits. Another fight that took place, we saw David Lemieux
on the undercard, unfortunately or fortunately for his opponent, he did not seem to fight with the same enthusiasm that he fought the last time he was in the ring. It was another fight that went the distance. John, did you think that David Lemieux, you know, do you think he showed some restraint last night, or do you think that, you know, he just wasn't motivated like he was when he fought Curtis Stevens?
Well, you know, the thing is, every fight is different, and he went in, I think he went into the fight with Curtis with much more respect for Curtis, his power, but also with a little bit of animosity towards Curtis. You know, they had a little personal beef between the two of them. You know, this fight, the guy he fought was a relative unknown, and I just feel like he went in with a little bit of a letdown. I think it took a lot to get him motivated to really fight the guy. And I think he saw early on that the guy was pretty tough, and you know, he took some good shots early on. So you know, I would expect him to perform more like we're used to seeing him if he fights a guy who's a perceived bigger threat. You know, sometimes you fight a guy who, not saying the guy that he fought wasn't good, but the guy wasn't well known. And sometimes it's hard to go into a fight like that when you're at a certain level and you're fighting a guy who is perceived to not be at that level. You know, it's hard to get motivated sometimes. I think against Curtis, he was extremely motivated. It was intense. And he probably went into this fight with a little bit less motivation than he was with Curtis.
Jabron, you know, I think David went into this fight, you know, thinking or, you know, figuring that there was a possibility that he could be Canelo's next opponent, because no one really thought that I think that fight was going to be signed that quickly. Jabron, what do you think? Do you think that, you know, David should have been even more, you know, motivated, you know, for this fight than it seemed like he was? I mean, you know, it's been a while since we, you know, seen him seemingly take time off.
Well, I can break it down to you like this. I've been following this fight card very closely leading up to the fight. And then, of course, you know, I know a little about David Lemieux. The problem with David Lemieux right now that everybody's overlooking, David Lemieux is struggling with weight. That's why he couldn't get the guy out of there and look explosive like he did in the other fight. He's struggling at weight. That fight was not at a catch weight. He struggled just to make that weight. And if you watch the weigh-in, as soon as he took 1 foot off the scale, he was searching for the bottle, searching, and he was just gulping. And when they was trying to talk to him and do an interview, that he gulping, and he's soft around his belly area. So he's struggling with the weight.
Layman, you agree with that?
You know what, man? That was the fight that I did not get to see. Unfortunately, I was actually at some friends' houses watching the horses race, the Kentucky Derby.
Hmm.
So by the time I made it home and got myself in a position to watch the fights, that fight was already on, and I didn't want to come in on the middle of it. I said I want to watch it all the way from the beginning, so I didn't get to check it out.
Stelly, what do you think about that? I mean, even when he fought Curtis, you know, we kind of saw that, you know, donut down the middle there. Do you think the media is getting hard to make weight?
Yeah, it could be. I'll say this much. I've known David since he was like 12 years old, and I've never seen him ripped. You know, like you kind of expect fighters to be cut, you know, six pack, the whole nine.
David has never really been that kind of guy, so it's hard to gauge sometimes because you know, he's just never been that type. But he did, yeah. I was kind of surprised he had a little bit of extra weight, and that could go back to, like I say, training for the fight. Maybe he didn't have that deep motivation, you know, to lose the weight as much as he did. And you know, the fact is, I mean, we're motivated as fighters, but sometimes deep down, if you know you're fighting a guy who you're expected to beat, I mean, it's hard to be as disciplined in key moments as you might need to be. You know, fighting Roy Jones and fighting, you know, Joe Schmo brings about different preparation sometimes. You know, but I think if David gets a fight with Canelo, for example, I think on fight night he'll look much better. I think the weight wouldn't be a problem. But again, I just feel like subconsciously he probably didn't have the same intense motivation, especially after you know, obliterating Curtis like he did. You know, I think maybe this fight was kind of a letdown mentally. And again, I'm just speculating.
We saw another. There was another fight on this card. Ended in a TKO, which I don't think a lot of us didn't see coming. But that was Lucas Matisse against Emmanuel Taylor. I thought Lucas looked real, very good, but I thought that maybe you know, Emmanuel, it was starting to show, you know, how many fights he had, and it's it was kind of evident to me that Matisse was just too much. John, what did you think about that fight?
You know, I didn't see the whole thing, but from the moments that I did see, I really thought Matisse looked pretty good. I was impressed. He looked, you know, he looked good. He looked very good. You know, I think it was definitely a positive night for him, and I think a lot of people are talking about him back in the mix now after that performance.
Layman, you know, how do you, as a fighter, you know, that's kind of been used to the spotlight and used to, you know, the accolades and that. Now you see Matisse fighting in front of a friendly crowd, and he really demolishes Taylor. Taylor being the young man, what do you think is ahead for Mr. Matisse, considering all of the battles that he's been in throughout the years?
You know, the thing about Matisse, he's been around for a little bit, and, you know, I don't know if his best days are behind him, but I think from the standpoint of business and success, I think that he should only be focusing on fights that really going to make sense at this point in his career. Most of his fights end up being pretty, you know, tough fights. As I always say, that whenever a guy goes into a tough fight, even if he wins, it always takes a little bit out of you and a little bit more and a little bit more. And it takes some more than others a little time for that to start to show the wear and tear on the body, whether it's the reflexes or it's the desire. But I think that right now the only fights Matisse need are the fights that are really going to make sense from a financial standpoint in his career.
Yvonne, what do you think is, you know, ahead for Matisse? Do you agree with Layman?
Yes, I agree with him. Definitely things that's going to make financial sense. I think they definitely have to move him very carefully due to that he's taken a lot of damage over his career. But he does have a lot of – he has some options out there, but we have to look at the politics. if they're very serious about cross promoting, you know, crossing the aisle and doing business with each other, he has a lot of options. But if they don't, I don't see a lot of options under the Golden Boy stable. Interesting fight I wouldn't mind seeing that I think that would be a crowd-friendly fair and a winnable fight for him. But once again, it would be tough would be Jesse Vargas.
Okay, all right. Mr. Yorgos Gamboa, we've talked about you know some of his style, and you know we all feared him he is definitely a contender, but he retired last night from his his fight with Mr. Castellanos. Do you think once again we've seen fighters with injuries? We've seen a lot of fighters come back from injuries, but did they say this was a shoulder injury? What was the deal on that, Jabron?
On who injury?
No, I said Gamboa. He retired. It wasn't. I mean, it wasn't.
No. It wasn't an injury. He told a referee that he was lightheaded and was dizzy, and he wasn't feeling well. So that's why they stopped. That's why they stopped the fight.
Oh, okay. All right. I was wondering because it was never like kind of explained what happened. But then when you go back to the lawsuit where supposedly the guy told the referee the same exact thing that you're saying, and they let the fight go on, and now he's in a coma. So. I can definitely understand, in the interest of safety. I'm assuming that this is the same as concussion protocol in a lot of other sports. John, do you think that this is I don't want to say good thing because anytime it's in safety, it's a good thing. But is this something that that maybe referees are starting to get more conscious of now than they were, say, like back in the day when you were in the ring or when Layman was in the ring?
Well, do me a favor. Just refresh, because my phone cut out there for a second. I didn't hear everything that was said. What are you referring to exactly?
We're talking about Yorkis Gamboa and the way he fought Friday night. His fight, the fight was stopped because, as DeBron was saying, he told the referee that he was feeling lightheaded.
Right.
So, I guess what I'm asking, do you think that the safety protocols now are more effective than they were back in your day? And what would be your advice to not only a young fighter but fighters like Yorkis Gamboa? Once you get into that concussion protocol, how safe is it for you to go back out there?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I put up a big status about this the other day. It was a big discussion, and I'll tell you something about me. When I was fighting, one thing I used to do when we would be on the way to the ring from the dressing room, I would always tell my trainer, I would say, listen, remember, I don't care what happens, don't stop this fight. Do not stop this fight If they stop it, they stop it. But you don't stop my fight. You understand? And they were like, yeah, I know. And I was always under that, you know, I would put myself in that mode. And when I was hurt in a fight, you know, if I was dizzy, if I was cut, if I was anything, I never in a million years would tell anyone. I wouldn't tell my trainer, and I certainly wouldn't tell the doctor. So in my eyes, any time when you're watching a fight, if a doctor says to a fighter, how do you feel? If he says anything negative, that means he wants to stop. I don't care what. A guy who wants to fight is never in a million years going to tell the ref or the doctor that there's any issue. So for me, once a guy says that, you've got to stop the fight, because not even physically, but mentally, he wants out. You know, a guy, Marvin Hagler, would never, ever, ever, ever tell the referee, I'm dizzy. That you would never hear that. That would never happen. So, you know, fighters are funny people, and you know, that's my thing. If a guy wants out of the fight, he's going to give you a reason to stop a fight. So as far as, you know, it's a tough thing, because, you know, you want to protect fighters. You want to. You really do, and I really do. But by the same token, you look at a guy, I don't know if you guys ever heard this story, but when Hagler was fighting Tommy Hearns, and he got cut really bad, the blood was in his eye, he got cut on the forehead, a slice was straight down his forehead. And the referee, if you remember, they stopped the fight so the doctor could look at Hagler's face. Now, the doctor said, can you see? Now, do you, any of you guys remember what Hagler said to the doctor? Anybody?
No, I don't remember, John.
Marvin Hagler said to the doctor, I ain't missing him, am I? And the doctor said, all right, go ahead. And they let it go. My point is, and I'm not going to name names, I saw a guy, a light heavyweight contender, a top 10 contender, and I'll never forget it. He was in a fight. I believe he had a cut. They stopped the fight to check on it. It's just, you know, to me, that's just casual. That's just, hey, it's a formality. The fighter's going to want to fight. And I never forget, they brought him to the corner and they said, and the doctor said, hey, are you okay? He was supposed to say, yeah, I'm good. And they would have let it go. And he said, the blood's running in my eye. I can't see that good. And they stopped the fight. And I know he wanted the fight to be stopped. I know it 100%. I'm not going to say who it is, but I know he wanted them to stop it, and they stopped it. So a fighter, a doctor, and a corner man to know the fighter individually. You have to know, and I pride myself on this as a trainer. I get to know the fighter because I have to know. If you tell me in the gym or in a fight, if you tell me I'm hurt, especially I'm hurt, if you tell me I'm hurt, I have to know if you're the type of guy that's lying just to get out of it because you don't feel like sparring that day, or I have to know if you're legitimately hurt. And I had a fighter like that. I won't name him, but he was a good fighter. He was a ranked fighter and everything, but he would do that. He was the type of kid where if he didn't feel like sparring, he would tell me, oh, yeah, I'm dizzy. And I knew he wasn't, but I had to stop the sparring because, A, I couldn't risk it, and B, I figure if he doesn't want to spar, you know, what am I wasting my time for? So it's a tough thing. That's why doctors need to know fighters. Trainers need to know fighters. And you need to know a guy like Hagler. You need to know the difference between a guy like Marvin Hagler and Arturo Gatti and other people. Not everyone. As a kid, I thought everybody was like Marvin Hagler and Rocky Marciano and Holyfield. I thought everybody was like that. And now that I've been in the game all these years, I realize that there are a lot of guys who are not anything like those people. So you have to know the difference.
Layman, I know, you know, you were a warrior also. I mean, you know, your battles are well documented. What do you think about particular situation? And you know, I mean, did you handle things like Scully, which it would seem like you did very closely? No knock on you, but I can't imagine you whispering to the referee or the doctor, you know, I'm dizzy or anything else. But what did you think about the whole situation. I mean, you know, like you say, you know, we want to care about the safety of the boxer, but you know, well, I mean, what's your thoughts, Lang? You've heard all of the discussion.
Well, I heard the discussion, man, and I believe it was Scully that said it. You know, you just got to know that fighter, man, because you have some fighters that will be quick to let you know when they got a pain. And then you got some fighters like myself. I fought many and plenty of fights injured in severe pain, and I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't quit. And sometimes it takes for your corner man, it takes for somebody that is really paying attention to the type of fighter you are to be able to know if you're really not as good as you say that you are. Because the last thing that a true fighter wants to do is have a fight stop because of some ailment, whether it be a cut, whether it be a broken hand, in my case, a detached retina, in my case, a chipped ankle bone, in my case, a partially torn ACL, in my case, what do you call that? Like a busted knuckle, basically, or a fractured wrist. I mean, you don't know unless you know that fighter what he's really like, why he's not performing up to what you think he should or could, unless you really know him. And then if you know him, you would know that he's not gonna say to you, hey, this is bothering me, because then it's like, well, what can you do about it? I remember several times when I wanted to say something to my trainer because the pain was so unbearable, but what could I do? Because I knew if I said something, he would stop the fight. So even if he asked me what was wrong, even if a part of me was screaming to tell him, I didn't want the fight stop. So, you know, we do what we got to do until we ain't got to do it no more. And so it's all like Scully say, when it comes down to it, it's all about knowing that fighter, you know?
Jabron, knowing, you know, going back to concussion protocol again, you know, you usually have anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months for a doctor to, you know, make an assessment. Let's say on the long end that he misses 6 months from now, you're talking about November, then getting back in fighting shape. So do you think, you know, that even at this particular point, what do you think is in store for Yorkis Gamboa, you know, knowing that he's over for this year? And, you know, I mean, how many more fights is he going to have as a lightweight?
I don't know if he's fighting again. Something that I noticed, really paying attention to him in the leading up to the fight, he, if you look real closely at his face, he seems like he's been possibly experimenting with some type of drugs or something. And this is just my opinion from based on my experience in life and in the streets. And in certain signs and certain things that you know, you will see and you will know, like, yeah, okay. And when I saw his face at the weigh-in, I was like, nah, he been doing some other things. And I was, when I saw that, I was nervous for him going into that fight after I seen him at the weigh-in on Thursday, I mean. So if you get my drift, but yeah, I think it's over for him. You got to look at it. The guy's not young. He's what, 35? He's 35.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this would seem to be a really big setback for him. Like I say, this year's over with. But let's talk about what's on everybody's mind, though.
We can't leave out Layman Brewster. We can't leave out the heavyweight division. We had to see Joseph Parker. Did you see the fight? I saw that garbage.
Yes, yes. You have definitely been Mr. Parker's one of his biggest critics, but I'm looking on here, and here's another DeBron. Have you ever established how many belts there really are, or does anybody know how many heavyweight belts that there are? I know what the big three are, but I mean, what is this? He's the WBO champion, and Joshua has three belts, and I mean, how many belts are there? Anybody know?
That's four major belts.
Okay, so Parker has one. Deontay has one.
And Joshua has two.
And Joshua has two. So what is this regular champion that we have in the, what is it, the WBA or WBO? So we have a regular champ, too, among all of these things. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know what none of that means.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what is the regular? I don't understand that. But anyway, go ahead, Jabron. Tell us about Mr.
Well,
Parker. I mean,
Joseph Parker fight was basically he was fighting a guy that was an old sparring partner. You know, that was a last-minute replacement due to Henry Fury pulling out of the fight. We could say maybe he wasn't motivated for the fight. He was familiar with the guy. I mean, he's a solid boxer, but it's nothing special about him. You know, he's undefeated, but it's nothing special about him. I feel like he's the weakest link out of the division, but it does spark some interest because Deontay could possibly fight him and grab that belt so he could have a little more leverage going into possibly a unification fight with Joshua. That's just, you know, my opinion, what I think Deontay should do and with the heavyweight division. But I only just see Joshua and Deontay right now, even though we got this blown up Tony Bellew trying to get in the mix, which goes to show that, you know, he's just trying to cash out because he really don't want to be in the heavyweight division. If you really pay attention to how he words certain things.
Yeah, I can see what you're talking about with Tony Bellew, and I can definitely understand what you're saying about Deontay and Joshua. But Layman, I got to ask you, considering how you feel about going overseas to fight. If by some chance, I mean, Joseph Parker fight, I'm sure he could, you know, find a way to get that in Alabama. But do you see any way that Deontay could possibly get this a fight with Joshua, move to Las Vegas, maybe the MGM Grand, or do you think that we'll have to find an even bigger venue than Wembley Stadium if that fight takes place?
Well, you know, I don't I don't think there's a problem with it being in a smaller venue, and I'm going to tell you why. Because you got a venue like MGM, right? No, it don't hold 90,000 people, but here you go. All those casinos on that strip will get together, and they'll put money into the pot so that it will be equivalent to having 90,000 people, because they understand that if they host a major fight in a place like Vegas, though they don't have the capacity, they'll be able to bring in a lot of more high rollers. You know, the liquor sales, the clubs, the clothes, the tourist attractions, the hotel rooms, the rental cars, all that will go up. I mean, they'll be able to make a lot of money for that city. So it's in the city's best interest to say, okay, look, MGM, we're going to throw $5 million in, and then that's another hotel. Here's another $5 million, another $5 million, until you get the money that they would need to host a fight like that. So I don't think it's necessarily I don't think it really matters where they would have the fight. I think at the end of the day, the money talks.
John, do you agree with that, or do you think, this is another fight that they would have to take over to England?
You know what? To be honest with you, I don't even really follow the heavyweight division all that much lately, for the last couple of years probably. It's just a division that's kind of been lost with all the different – the different belts and the regular belts and the super belts. And I was a little disappointed. I've been watching different guys. I like Joshua. But I tell you, Deontay Wilder, as impressive as his record is, I watch him fight and, I'm just not very impressed with his technique, especially if you think of the history of heavyweight champions and what they fight like. And, I see it. I don't see it with him, in terms of skills and polish. So I don't know. Now you have the, and Shannon Briggs, I like Shannon Briggs. He's a friend of mine. I'm just talking about the business. He's fighting for a championship, but the fact is that he's fighting for a WBA title, which I thought was good. Him and Frez are fighting for the WBA, even though Frez has not fought in, I think, 3 or 4 years. But then I find out the other day that Joshua is actually the WBA champion. So, I don't know. I mean, the heavyweight division is really kind of grown away from it's left my sights. I don't know that much about it anymore because it's, the boxing business is really turning me off to the whole thing. So I don't know. I mean, I know I've said a lot about it, but for a guy who says he can't say much about it, but I don't know. I'm confused by it all, and I'm not even sure right now. I haven't watched it closely enough to say who the best is or who should fight who. I mean, to be honest with you, the guy Parker, I never heard of him until about a week and a half ago. I had no idea who. Somebody said he was a heavyweight champ, and I thought they were joking. I didn't know. I don't even know who he is. I don't even know what he looks like. So, you guys tell me, because I don't know.
Jabron, when you hear a seasoned veteran and historian of boxing talk about the heavyweight division in such terms as being almost a dead weight. How do you feel about that? I mean, what do you think? I mean, this used to be the division that defined boxing. Now we're talking about Triple G and Andre Ward. I mean, it has the heavyweight division kind of buried itself with all of the different belts and sanctioning bodies? What do you think, Jabron?
I mean, yeah, well, we could say over the past past 5 years, it's pretty much been irrelevant. I mean, Latterman was the champ, and that was it. Everybody else, it was just peas in the pot, basically. But I feel like it starts to be a resurgence now that Joshua has kind of dethroned Latimer, and I think that he can be the future of the heavyweight division. He's a little vulnerable, but far as his all around, not just in the ring, the way he carries himself, his fan base, the things that he's doing outside of the ring, far as promoting himself, and honestly, I don't think that he has to come to the United States. You could put him in there with a cab driver and 90,000 people are going to show up. Maybe not 90, we'll say 70, 50 at least.
Layman, when you hear, you know, your colleagues, you know, and fans, you know, saying things like this about the heavyweight division, and you used to be a heavyweight champ, you know, when it really meant something. I mean, you know, the heavyweight champ was, you know, the baddest on the planet. You know, I mean, how does it make you feel, Lane, and knowing that, you know, the division seemingly has eroded that much in the minds of the fan base?
Well, I get it, man, and I understand. You know, I run into people say, well, I stopped watching boxing after Mike Tyson. You know, I stopped watching boxing, you know, after Muhammad Ali. You know, it is what it is, you know. Some divisions are for more for some people and some divisions aren't. I think that the heavyweight division needs a bona fide heavyweight that, like we've always had throughout the past, that really defined what a heavyweight was, which was somebody that went in there and took care of business. And it was exciting and electrifying, and it made you want to tune in to watch the fight, like when Mike Tyson was fighting. You knew it was going to be an exciting fighter no matter who Mike fought, because Mike was going to make it exciting. And we need somebody that can revitalize boxing. And you know what? I think for the most part, I think it's coming back, man. I think it's greater now than it's been in several years, with the excitement of Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. You know, I think those two are starting to emerge as true champions that people are going to want to see in the future, because they get the job done. They've been stopping guys. And I just think that, you know, we cannot look to the past in terms of what boxing was then, because now we're at a point where we're almost grabbing for anybody, and we got this mindset, I guess, that bigger is better. So we have this thing of looking for these big heavyweights, not understanding that a lot of these guys are not killers. They're just good athletes, and a good athlete can always make a fight interesting. But until you get a guy that got that real killer instinct, I mean, you know what? I think we're starting to see that, man, and maybe like a Joshua, you know, Deontay Wilder, like I said. But, again, it just have not been enough time. And then, you know, you need the opposition. You need a guy that is willing to go in there, that's really coming in there to really try to win, and he got a name too. And I think that's going to help to bring back the sport. I just think that there was a transition, because if you look at the decades, every decade or every two decades, every 20 years, the fighters get taller, they get a little bigger. And so with that being said, every decade you got more and more of the old school trainers going to the grave, and a lot of these new trainers trying to take what they thought these guys did and continue that legacy, but obviously they've not done enough homework. And I don't always put it all on the trainer. Again, it takes these fighters, but what people fail to realize, the bigger a guy is, and this is just the law of nature, the bigger a guy is, the less likely he is to have that killer desire. And I say that because when you grow up and you're a big guy, you already get the sense that people are afraid of you or what you're capable of doing. But when you're smaller, like a guy like Mike Tyson or Evander Holyfield, well, then it's like you got something to prove. Well, then that's something that you want to see. That's something that that's worth turning out to watch. You very seldom see a tall guy with just this crazy look in his eye and this killer instinct. You know, you can't really relate to him. You can relate to a bully. He's bigger than you, and he's tough. But in real life, we all know bullies ain't really tough. They just want attention. But when you get an average-sized guy that's a game fighter, then that's what you call excitement. And I think that boxing and the heavyweight division will emerge as an exciting division again, but I think we just really got to get our mind right. We got to get our priorities straight, man. It's not about size. And as long as people, and I'm talking about the fans, as long as the fight fans is looking for the Jolly Green Giant to be a killer, boxing in the heavyweight division is always going to be lacking. And that's just my take on it.
Well, you know, like I said, you're a heavyweight champ, so you know more about the mindset than any of us. But let's talk about, we only got a few minutes left here. So, Lena, starting with you, we've heard, like I said, hasn't been signed yet, but we have heard Triple G and Canelo in September. So, this has two effects here because effectively they're taking the date that Floyd and Conor McGregor would have had. So, number one, what do you think of do you think that we will see a Canelo Triple G fight? And number two, do you think that this Conor McGregor Floyd thing was all the rumors anyway?
Well, I think that Conor McGregor Floyd fight, I think that's a fight that Floyd wants to happen. I think that's a fight that everybody really wants to happen, just because you got two different worlds clashing and you got two guys that are the top at in each genre. So I think it's a matter of time, because the dollars does make sense and it will make sense. Now, as far as the fight goes with Triple G and Canelo, I think that could very well be the biggest fight of the year and probably one of the best fights of the decade. With Canelo coming out as the winner, in just my opinion, because I kind of feel like Triple G was kind of exposed in his last fight, and I think that, you know, if a guy like Canelo can come out and put on another spectacular show, as I thought he did last night, with his movement, with his energy, with his conditioning, with his speed, I don't really think the Triple G is going to give him too much trouble for the duration of a 12-round bout. I think Triple G at best would probably be 7-8 rounds if he shows up like he did in his last fight. I don't think he'll be able to even maybe possibly go the distance with the guy like Canelo. But, you know, again, that's just my opinion, man. Just judging on the two styles, I don't see anything spectacular about Triple G. I think he's a fantastic puncher. I think he's got decent skill. I haven't seen him enough I haven't seen him tested enough to say, oh, he's a great fighter. But I believe in my mind, as a fan and as a fighter, as a lover of the sport, I can say, to me, Canelo has really shown to be the cream of the crop right now. And so I will put my money on Canelo, and I think that he would beat Triple G all around. That's just what I think.
Wow. Okay. Please. Scully, you agree?
Well, here's one thing I'll say this. I was at the fight with Danny Jacobs and Triple G, and I love Triple G. I think he's fierce. But to be honest with you, being there live, I thought he lost the fight. I really did. I really thought Danny, confused him. I thought Danny's body punching. And the main thing, I thought Danny answered back every time that Triple G did something well. Danny answered back with 3, 4, 5 shots at a time. He looked really good. But by the same token, the difference is that Canelo, who was a very, very, very good fighter, of course, but I don't think Canelo is as loose and fluid like Danny was, as elusive, the way he was able to step around. He's a little bit, less fluid than Danny, and especially when he lets his combinations go. I think Triple G had a lot of trouble with Danny because Danny's movement and Danny's height. I think Canelo presents a little bit different, look. It's a great fight. It's a very tough fight for both guys. And obviously Triple G is going to have to, go back to the drawing board in a sense and clean things up. But again, one thing I think that Canelo does not have that ranginess like Danny does, and that really fluid movement along with the height to step around and be elusive. So I think that's one thing going in Triple G's favor, is that he won't have the same problems with Canelo. But it's going to be a huge fight. I hope it happens. If it happens, I'll be there. I'm planning on going. I've already talked to my friend in Las Vegas actually today. Told him, if the fight happens, make sure you make room for me, and let's get the ticket situation going. But again, I think it's a different style matchup. So I think Triple G will perform better because he won't have to deal with the exact attributes that Danny had that I think really gave him a lot of trouble. I think Canelo will engage a little bit more. And Triple G will be able to reach him a little bit more. So I think it's going to be a bitterly contested fight. I could see it being a very, very, very good fight.
Yeah, I give the edge in this fight to Abel Sanchez, but we'll talk about this as the fight gets a little bit closer. Jabron, your thoughts on this proposed fight, and do you think that this actually means that McGregor Mayweather is dead?
I don't think McGregor Mayweather is dead. It might not happen on that date, but the fight will happen. But as far as Canelo, Triple G, I definitely want to see the fight. It's already in Box Rec scheduled. For the titles is on different sites already stamped, so hopefully we get the fight. But as far as the outcome, I'm kind of leaning towards Triple G because the simple fact is that Canelo, he's a very good boxer, but the thing is he has great upper body movement, but he's in quicksand. Like, he don't move his feet, and he takes a lot of time off in rounds That's why he backs up to the ropes a lot of times. It's not just in this fight. He did it in the Floyd fight. He did it in just about all his fights. That's when he takes breaks to get gas, to fill up his tank. And I think Triple G is good with pretty much cutting the ring off, especially if you don't have great feet. And that's why Danny was so great, because like Scully said, he was long, he had range, and he had great footwork. That's something that Canelo don't have. So I would kind of lean the edge to Triple G, because he's going to keep applying pressure. And that's one thing Canelo don't deal with good is live bullets coming at him. Because even though Floyd isn't a big puncher, when Floyd was throwing combinations, Canelo was retreating and backing up to the rope. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, guys, hey, it's been fun as usual. But let's see. Let's start with you, Scully. You know, give us your final thoughts for the evening and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, I just want to let everybody know, and Jaban, you're in New York, so you'll appreciate this. On June 3rd at Monique's Lounge in Spanish Harlem, we are doing a fundraiser for Wilfredo Benitez. I don't know if any of you saw the pictures and the video of Wilfredo from about a week and a half ago, but he's not looking very good. He's not doing very well. So we're trying to help raise money for him. So we're doing a fundraiser at Monique's Lounge in East Harlem, the same place that I did my amateur boxing reunion a few weeks ago. I talked to Iran Barkley today, and he'll be there. I talked to Junior Jones. He'll be there. Marlon Starling, Juan Laporte, Pedro Vieira, a bunch of guys, a lot of guys. We're gonna really, really do good. Angel Manfredi's driving in from Indiana for it. So we're going to do our best to raise money for Benitez. All the proceeds will go to him 100%. It costs $20 to get in, and with that you get a Wilfredo Benitez t-shirt. So, you know, I encourage anyone in the New England, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area, come over on June 3rd to Monique's Lounge in Harlem, Spanish Harlem, and support the Bible of Boxing, Wilfredo Benitez. And as far as me, just as usual, you can always find me on Facebook, John the Iceman Scully, or Twitter and Instagram, Ice John Scully, Iceman John Scully, excuse me. I'm always on there. I'm always talking boxing, and I welcome new friends.
Yeah, hey. Thank you so much, John, and we hope that you're around next week. You know, as usual, we always enjoy your insights on the game. So thank you very much, John, and we hope to see you next week.
All right. So everybody have a good night.
Mr. Brewster.
Yes, sir.
Always good to have you on the show. Always good to get your insights, especially into the heavyweight division and what it's like to be one of those young lions in the ring. So, Benjamin, tell everybody where they can find you on social media and give our audience your final thoughts.
Well, as always, you could follow me, Lamon Brewster, LamonBrewster. That's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's Twitter. And just to let you guys know that this Saturday, I believe it's the 13th, James Toney will be stepping back into the ring in his hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I believe it's going to be his retirement party, at least I'm hoping it is. And so me and the wife are going to go up to be ringside. Ray Mercer will be there as well. And I'll be reporting back to you guys on the outcome of this fight.
Oh, most definitely. Make sure you send some pictures and everything back. You know, we post a lot of your stuff on our page, of course, the Pugilist Corner. And if anybody wants to get some insights into politics and, the origin of the black man and some very controversial but interesting topics, follow the champ. He'll give you some knowledge as well as incite your mind to think a little bit. So he does a lot of things, not just here on the show, but he does a lot of things in social media. So be sure and follow the champ. Thank you so much, champ. And hey, man, I look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, John.
Anytime, champ.
Well, Jabron, we know that where you'll possibly be on June 3rd, hopefully we can get some pictures and maybe some videos from talking to some of the champs former great boxers there to be the fundraisers. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and your final thoughts for the evening?
Well, as always, thank you guys, the champ and Scully and UJK and the listeners. And keep supporting boxing, as always. I'm Jabron. You can find me on Facebook. That's JABRANCLEMON. Let them know where they can find you, JK.
Well, as usual, you can find me on Facebook at the Pugilist Corner. You can see some articles that we cross over from different pages, as well as get up on the latest news. You can also find me on Twitter. We are under the Swartz Crib. And also, you can find me talking boxing at West Coast Steeler Fan. So, thank all our listeners. I'd like to thank the champ, thank John Scully, and admire the birthday boy taking time out for us. We appreciate everything that he does for the show. And his commitment to the sport. So thank you, everyone. We look forward to seeing you next week. And don't forget to catch us Tuesday night on the Pugilist Corner. So have a great night, everyone. See you next week.